God. Not a fan. My name is Chris Kramer. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. I am honored to be here. How cool is this? I got to thank Joey for asking us. And this is a cough drop. I need to put this someplace. There you go. I'll have it on my coat here before you know it. How cool it is to be here. I've been traveling nonstop and just was able to squeeze this in. I'm sorry I missed Steve earlier and Mel. I've had a chance to hear Mel a few times. In fact, I've shared the podium with him a couple of times. I'm sure he doesn't remember, but that's okay. It was unmemorable for me. I just, absolutely, to be around somebody that's been around this long and knows the history and knows exactly what, it's just, he's singing this song, you know, and he's talking about the message that we were given and how this, people wonder, I think, sometimes why I get so passionate about this. Is, folks, I nearly died getting here. Something he said earlier and something I've heard others speak, there's so many ways to get to Alcoholics Anonymous, to get to the Narcotics Anonymous, any of the 12-step fellowships. There's so many ways to get here. And, you know, the court system, we get a whole bunch, and treatment centers send us a whole bunch, and just the street sends us a bunch, and I don't know. We all get here in little different avenues. But there's a percentage of people that are what the book calls real alcoholics. I'll give you this and stop doing the comparisons. Real drug addicts. There's a lot of people out there that drink a lot that are not alcoholic. You can, just because you drink a lot doesn't mean that you're one of us. And the book spends the first 60 pages or so explaining what this is. And so I'm not trying to be controversial up here at all or anything of that nature. I'm just saying there's lots of ways to get here and lots of ways to find sobriety. I messed around this for a long time and almost died. And when I finally got here, I don't think anything different other than that it was God's hand on this whole process, because I landed in a room full of people that understood that this was about more than a fellowship. That the fellowship, albeit was wonderful, it was not much for the real alcoholic unless you connected it with the program. So, and the program was written down for us in a thing called the Big Book. I apologize for my facetiousness about some of our literature, but it can confuse the bejesus out of newcomers. Some of this stuff is so watered down, so middle of the road. And you may be able to stay sober that way. I'll say this and move on. I was talking to a guy out in the lobby, and he said, you know, I hear this a lot. I'm not, you know, I first heard you talk a bunch of years ago, and, you know, you offended me, and you made me mad when I heard you speak, I'm so sorry for that. And there was a time when I wasn't doing what I'm doing now, which is a bit of qualifying. For anybody that I've ever stepped on, I want to publicly make amends to now, because I'm not trying to be heavy-handed, and I'm not trying to tell anybody how to do this. I'm trying to share my experience, not Joey's experience, you know. My wonderful wife's here, Patty, and I'm not trying to share her experience. This is what happened to me, and you can agree with it or not. If you don't, that's fine too. I still love you, and I hope we get to see each other, you know, downstream someplace. Maybe like at Denny's, and we can visit and have a coffee. And I hope you never darken the door of an AA meeting again. Okay, so I just had to get it in. Y'all know I'm kidding. Of course I hope I see you. I love you to death. And I just, that's the way. But I about 5 years sober, I got a guy named Mark Houston. He just had passed away this year, and is who Joey was talking about. And this cat started sponsoring me. I ended up working for a treatment center where he worked. And yeah, he sponsored me for 17 years. And in fact, I was speaking in Montana this year, and when he got word that Patty called us that he had passed away, and a few months later, 5 months to be exact, I ended up going to work for the place where he worked. So I'm saying that because from my perspective, I get this chance to see people die from this disease every day. It's not like, you know, people come and go in AA. I mean, this is in the industry that I'm in. We get to watch people die from this illness, and I understand how narrow this path can be sometimes. I watch a lot of people come into our fellowships and through these hospitals and through treatment centers, our little recovery center, and they look up on the walls and they see the 12 steps on there. And they're coming out of detox, you know, the Ativan's wearing off, and they start to, you know, hit the ground running a little bit, and they start looking at us and says, "Oh shit, oh no. No, not another AA deal." You know, I mean, I did AA. You know, I did AA, it just doesn't work. You know, and my heart goes out to them because I know it does work when you do it. Most of these people that I end up sitting down and talking to, we find out that they did AA okay. They did one part of a three-part deal, the whole package. Recovery Unity Service is what we're supposed to be about. The Big Book explains it, talks about it, but they came to one part, the fellowship. They went to 90 meetings in 90 days, and hot damn, and they relapsed. It's like, oh my gosh, what did you think was going to happen, you know? That's why I get cranky with the mixed messages that we carry, because you won't find 90 meetings in 90 days anywhere in this literature. You won't find any place in this book says that you've got to go to a meeting every day. You won't find just go to meetings and don't drink. A friend of mine in London, I was reading his little blog this last week. He says, "One thing I can guarantee you, you will drink again and you will not be able to make a meeting." If you think for a second that you can do, let me put it another way. If you can do that, just go to a meeting and don't drink. How cool is that? You don't have to do the little pesky steps, and you don't have to work with those stupid slobbing drunks, and oh my gosh, how cool is that? And some of you are laughing and some of you are not because you still believe that you can do that. And I'm here to tell you, if you can, I love you. Rock on. But that's not the message that we're supposed to be carrying to the newcomer. If you can put the plug in the jug and just not drink on your own power, you're not an alcoholic. I don't know what you are, but you're not an alcoholic. Didn't say you weren't welcome. You are welcome. I guess. Let me tell you a little bit about my story. And I'm watching the clock because I know we've been going for a bit, and some of y'all are going to need to pee pretty quick. So I'm watching. I'm paying attention. I was raised up in Kerrville, Texas, up in the hills. Actually, I was born out in Odessa, Texas. We were oil field trash. My father published a drilling magazine up in the hills. He was a printer forever and a wonderful man. He was an alcoholic, and he's passed away now. He was a good guy. He was a situational kind of a drunk. I mean, he's a periodic is what we call him. He could stay sober for long periods of time, dry anyway, and then something would set him off, and he'd be off to the stupid races for a while, and had all the symptoms of what we call untreated alcoholism. And my mother's not. She's a little social drinker. She had a glass of wine tonight at 5 o'clock. Excuse me. I know that because she's had a glass of white wine at 5 o'clock ever since I can remember. A glass of white wine. Unless it tastes kind of funky. I've seen her at holidays before with the big laugh at our families. She'll drink it. She's a little bit of a connoisseur, I think. And she'll take a little sip like that. And if it's good, she'll finish drinking. If it's not, she slides it across the table. I said, "Mom, that thing had a cork in it. Come on, that's good stuff." And she says, "It just tastes a bit off." You know, and she'd slide it across the table and she wouldn't touch another drop. I was like, I mean, I'm thinking back in my drinking days, guys. I drank 19 years. I mean, you know, a bit off. Never once did I describe this stuff tastes like crap. Coom, peem, dung, gung, gung, gung. And I don't care. It's a bit off. Good gosh. Big Book says we drink for the effects produced by the alcohol. And that's, I don't care what it tastes like. I don't care what it tastes like as long as it gets the job done. And I mean, that's when it starts to separate those that are and are not. Bill Wilson in his literature, I digress a second, but he talks a lot, and specifically he keeps using the term over and over. One of our earlier speakers introduced himself as a real alcoholic. Man, I'm thank you, because there's nothing wrong with that. Bill Wilson spends pages trying to explain that there's a difference between a real alcoholic and the little disco drunk. He didn't quite use the little disco drunk. That term hadn't come alive yet. But that's somebody that can quit on their own. But the real alcoholic won't be able to do that. And it also tells us that we're supposed to introduce ourselves as recovered alcoholics. Unless you're not recovered. And then don't. Oh my gosh. I was in Austin when I moved to Austin to take over this new position. Patty got me a little garage apartment over there, you know, and I started to look at. I'm so spoiled. I've got this home group called the Outpost up in Ingram, and it's a little club that we built up in there, and it's a little big thumper heaven. And I'm so spoiled, you know. You walk in and it's all thumpers, and that's all we do is study the big book. And so I went to Austin, Texas, and I started looking for a new group because I gotta find a home group. It's too far to go back to my old one, and so I gotta. And I introduced myself in a meeting. My name is Chris Raymer, and I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. And there was about 20 people in there, and their heads, it looked like a scene from The Exorcist. They all looked around. It's like all the treatment center babies, you know. You oh my gosh. Guys, when the obsession to use goes away, you're as recovered as you're going to get. Just like my friend Mel said, good gosh. Oh my gosh. I'm fighting some character defects I've been fighting for 23 years. Oh my gosh. I'm still a bozo sometimes. I'm still a lousy example of what this thing is all about sometimes, you know? But I got to tell you guys, my testimony from the podium is I haven't wanted to drink once in 23 years. Why in the heck would I want to stand up here and paint a picture that I'm still sick? I'm not. And that's what the book says. Introduce yourself to the new man as a person who has recovered. Why is that so controversial? Why do so many people... I mean, we're so rigid in this program. You newcomers, you need to be open-minded. But as old geezers that have been sober 30 years, we just be as rigid, so rigid we'll break, you know? My counselor at Hazleton said we'll always be recovering. Wow, okay. Rock on. Okay. My therapist said that. My sponsor said, what does the big book say? Just a thought. Saying. People say, why do you hit this so hard? You make people uncomfortable. I'm not trying to make anybody uncomfortable. I agree with exactly what's been said here from the other speakers today. Guys, we've got one game. This is what we have to offer to the newcomer that's coming through the door. Again, I've worked in this industry for a gazillion years, and these folks, buddy, they're all waiting for a new pill, you know? When are they going to come up with a pill that will fix this problem? I don't know. I'm telling you now, there's nothing in the pipeline that will work. There's dozens of pills that will help with the craving, the first piece of this illness, this phenomenon called craving. There's lots of things that can help with that. There's some of these medications. We don't have a single thing called an anti-obsession pill, you know? That feeling when you haven't been drinking for about a week and you go like this, God, am I going to have a drink? There's not a pill to fix that. There's one thing that will fix that. It's called booze. So... yeah, or a Klonopin. That'll do it too. Oh my gosh, don't get me started on the medications. There's nothing out there, guys. AA is the only game in town. The 12 steps, that's what it's about. So I don't want that message watered down. I tell you, my dad moved us to the hill country as soon as he could get out of West Texas. And he continued to drink for on and off. There's no abuse in our family. He was just a nice, quiet drunk. And my twin brother and I, some of y'all know Myers, he and I got to be good drinking buddies, and we thank God for alcohol in high school. In 1971, January, the month that Bill Wilson, our co-founder, passed away, I took my first drink of Boone's Farm apple wine, and I'm sure Bill would have approved. And I was a little kid that needed to drink so bad it wasn't even funny. Y'all understand? I lost his eye in a rock fight when I was 11. I don't say it often from the podium, but I could have used a shot of vodka at 11. I got to tell you, I'm convinced if I'd had a shot of vodka, I'd have two eyes today because it would fix the problem. And I was so irritable, restless, and discontent. I went out and started the rock fight. I mean, good gosh, you just got to excite this thing somehow. And I was off to the races, boys. I got in the food business, not because I was particularly good at a cook or whatever, but I thought those guys in whites back there with all that fire looked pretty cool, and they were obviously getting laid a lot, and so I wanted to be that. But they could also drink. It was just standard procedure. It's hot back there. You couldn't possibly get drunk because you sweat so. Let me assure you that is a rumor, a vicious rumor. There's been many of us and curled up on a sack of potatoes in the walk-in, nice and quiet, you know, drunk on our butts. But I was pretty talented in this food industry business. My twin brother was going to become a world famous mixologist. a bartender, and we went to Houston, and I got an apprenticeship program at a big hotel there, and we were pretty successful. We did pretty well. We had a little apartment with shag carpet and a couple of beanbag chairs, and it was pretty good. Mid-70s, I'm in Austin, Texas as a sous chef at a country club over there, and I start seeing a doctor for some depression. I see my first therapist for depression, and I'm dying. And of course, I remember the therapist said, "Did you drink?" And I said, "Well, a couple. I mean, I cook for a living. I mean, okay, that's fine." I mean, we never gave these guys a straight shot, but that was my journey for the next 10 years. I was in and out of therapist couches, and every time I'd go to another one, they'd give me another pill. And I'm world famous for that out there. Living better chemically. You know, I don't care what it is. There's a pill for it. You chop it up, snort it, it goes just faster, you know. It's just, God almighty. And I can't kick the depression. It was to be another 15 years before I figured out, before I read in the big book that one of the main symptoms of untreated alcoholism is depression. We have so many of the symptoms that we treat medically, like with pills, that are symptoms of what we call untreated alcoholism. A lot of you guys sitting in the room, especially if there's any family members in here, still believe the lie that if I'll stop drinking, if I could just put some sobriety, I know I would be okay. That's not true. If you're a real alcoholic and you stop drinking, your life will get worse, not better. A lot of shit. Can I get a witness? Yeah. Amen. Yeah. But I got to tell you, it's amazing how many licensed counselors I know that don't understand that. Doctors, therapists, psychiatrists that don't understand that. Society believes that the alcohol is the problem. That's why what we do in the United States is if you don't stop, we're going to lock you up. That's just the coolest thing in the world. Thank you for doing that. I appreciate it. I'm not saying we shouldn't do that, but I'm saying it won't help anything. If you're a real alcoholic, you lock us up, we just go crazy. We just go nuts, and then you let us out. The first thing we do is go put the fire out. We go take a drink. The big book says on page 24 is that we have lost the power of choice in drink. It's probably one of the most controversial things we talk about. And I got to tell you guys, I could talk for an hour just about this idea that we choose to drink. I got to tell you guys, we don't choose to drink. It's a form of insanity that takes place with real alcoholism. It's a horrible thing. That's why people are not threatened into recovery because we won't remember. The book says we won't remember the consequences of even a week or a month ago. That's why you can threaten me with loss of my kids or my wife or my freedom. It's not going to stop me from drinking. That's what's so frustrating about this illness. That's why the necessity of the thing called a spiritual experience. See, you're not going to think through this. Here's what happens to me every time. I'm a two-week wonder. I can quit on a dime. Brother said it earlier. It's not stopping. It's the bear. It's the staying stopped. It's tough. And I can stop on a dime. I quit. I'm not going to do it anymore. I wake up with a hangover. Girl's mad. Whatever. Job's freaking out. I can quit. And about 2 weeks out, I'm so uncomfortable, I can't stand it. The morning started out okay. Everybody's patting on the back. Oh, Chris, it's so great that you're sober. How cool is this? And I'm thinking, God damn, I should have done this years ago. You know, car got washed and checkbook got balanced. Oh, my gosh, I need to do something about this. And, you know, everything's okay and feeling a little bit better. I've joined another health club. I'm gonna lose this gut. I'm going to beef up a little bit, you know, and you're with us? You see them coming into AA every time. The first few weeks, it's just golden. Everything's just great. I should have done this. They're sitting there looking at the cup of coffee with tears coming, and they're just crying, and I'm just so happy. They haven't done anything. All they've done is not drink. I'm not laughing at that. That's called God's grace. That's what this whole thing is about. But if you'll hurry up and work the steps while you're in that spot, you'll be golden. But we don't let them do that. We let them sit there in that spot like that, and you just easy does it. Think. Take your time. Just do it any way you want to, and then we chill out, right? And then the insanity returns, and they drink again, and then we just dust them off and blame them. Yeah, the little bastard, I knew he didn't want it. I picked up more desire chips than you can shake, buddy, because I'm going to tell you, every time I went in there and humbled myself to pick up a chip, and the embarrassment of a shy guy like me, literally, walking in a room full of talking to you people, you got to know that I wanted to get sober. You got to know I needed to get sober. But I thought that I had the power to pull it off if I wanted to bad enough. Nobody in 7 years of Alcoholics Anonymous ever explained that to me. And I'm still offended by it. Hurt by it. Upset about it. Because I still see it today. I got 2 weeks under my belt, longest I've ever had without alcohol, and I'm coming apart at the seams. I was okay this morning, and at noon I'm a little irritable, restless, and discontent. And 3 o'clock I leave the work a little early. I'm irritated because somebody looked at me wrong. A little sensitive. Y'all understand that, you know? Slam the door so everybody knows that Chris Kramer has left the building. Get in my car and drive around the freeway for a while, grinding. This is not turning out the way I thought. I don't know what I expected. I might as well just, pull into a 7-Eleven, get a 7-Eleven, little Dr. Pepper. I just need to chill. Got the radio. God, all they play is crap on this radio station. What is the matter with this place? Pull the Dr. Pepper down, and I hear the little voice that I hear at some point in there. You could probably have one beer. No, that's what happened last time. I had one beer and then I bought a 12-pack and then I was off the stupid races again. I don't want to have, that's just stupid. That's the way it always starts. I get drunk. I don't want to play. Get the Dr. Pepper, turn around, start walking back to the counter and get about halfway back. What are you, a pussy? Stop. Mid-stride, right there by the school supplies. Y'all know what I'm talking about. The candies on one side, the school supplies. I stop right there. No, I'm not. Ladies looking over there, who are you talking to? Myself, don't worry about it. Turn around, walk straight back to the counter, open it up, put the Dr. Pepper back. Next. Beer. Grab one. This isn't going to hurt. Put it back. Grab a quart. If it's going to be one, it's going to be a big one. Grab a quart, get a little grin on my face. Everything's okay because I'm just going to drink this and that's going to be it. I've had a tough week. They're not treating me right. It's going to be okay. Walk up to the counter and everything's okay. Guys, if I'd had a gun when I walked into the place, I'd have shot myself or anybody else that had come near me because I'm that uncomfortable in my skin. And I've got a cold quart in my hand standing there in front of me, and a little creep cuts in front of me to get his little money order cashed. You with us? And this guy with about 40 lottery tickets, and he wants them all done up like that. And I'm sitting there with a big grin, says, "You go ahead, honey. You good luck. I hope you win that lottery. You split it with me, you little yahoo." And I'm just as happy as I can be. Little social sunbeam from Jesus. Everything's just happy, happy, happy. I haven't even got this haven't even swallowed yet. And I've got this in my hand, and everything's like, "No, you go ahead. I'm in no hurry. I'm in no hurry." God, come on, guys. We don't even have to have this stuff in our system before the power of this takes over. Y'all understand how powerful that is? Good God Almighty. And people wonder, why can't you just stop? Because it's the only thing that makes me feel okay inside. Y'all understand that? I'm not drinking to get squashed. I hear people talk about that all the time, especially the college-age kids. I drink to get just wasted. I don't remember ever doing that. I drink to get right. It looks wasted to you. I understand. I understand. I understand that. But that's not my intention. See, my intention is to get right. Come on, guys. You get squashed. That's when you get a DWI. That's when you get fights with a girl. That's when you get in trouble. That's when you get in fights and stuff. You know me. I mean, God. I'm getting in a fight just walking in a bar. My last drinking days were in a bar called the Jolly Rogers. Now, I've had this. That's not even funny. That's so. Come on, guys. And I've been wearing this patch since I was, 21? And I'm walking into a bar with a Jolly Rod. How many? I mean, what did you think was going to happen in there? Somebody pop up with a pirate joke and I'm in your face. And then I'm on the floor. I mean, that's how, and it says over and over and over. And it's just, oh my gosh. But that's the kind of only place that would deal with me in my end-stage alcoholism. God, can you believe that people out there that drink a lot, they don't want to be around some of us because we're not fun people to be around, even when we're drinking. I don't want to be drunk, guys. I want to be right. I want to be comfortable in my skin. And that's what happened to me when I took that drink of Boone's Farm apple wine on the Guadalupe River, leaning up against one of those big old 700-year-old cypress trees. And I drank that Boone's Farm, and I said, God damn, this is what Pops was doing. This is what he was trying to reap. This is good. And I could talk to girls, and I could do things that I ordinarily didn't do, and I didn't feel like a loser. And I went and applied for a job under the influence and got the job. And I got my driver's license under the influence, and y'all understand? It was okay. When alcohol works for us, folks, I need a Gleek seal. When alcohol works for us, there is nothing better on the face of the earth. If it would still work like that, I'd still be drinking today. And so would you, yes. It stops working. This is progressiveness of this. This is what's so frustrating with me and the stupid war stories. This is because we've got this problem in our meetings when all we want to do is talk about the war stories, and we separate ourselves from the people around us that maybe not are on the same progression. Well, you're not going to scare anybody into these rooms with war stories. Guys, come on, I ate out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas for a short period of time. And I got to tell you, I mean, I wasn't living on the streets. I had an apartment. I just didn't have enough money to eat. And I ate out of dumpsters. It was sad. My father would have certainly been disappointed if he'd have seen that nonsense. But I could come in these meetings and tell that. But I don't know anybody that would ever come up and say, oh, my gosh, I started to take a drink today and I remembered Chris ate out of a dumpster and I stopped. I just didn't. And then we laugh and we go straight back in the meetings and tell it again. I think our stories are so important on a Friday night speaker meeting. In a 12-step call, buddy, you better have a story, or that guy's going to tell you to go kiss his butt. He didn't want to have anything to do with you unless he thinks you know what we're talking about, unless that you've been there. See, you better have a story. But in an open discussion meeting, why are we telling the same stupid story again and again? And you're free to disagree with that. I don't want to forget where I came from. The book says you will forget where you came from. When the obsession comes back, you will not remember my story. You won't remember your story. And in the process of not understanding this, all you're doing is driving people out of our fellowship because they can't stand sitting in our meetings listening to these stories. And when we're not doing that, we're trying to fix your day. All the little junior therapists in the world. Oh, I'm sober today, 8 months now, and I know I can help you with your relationship. It's like, oh, my God. How many times have you been married? 5 times. And why don't you keep helping me with the one thing that we have in common is this untreated alcoholism. Maybe you can help me with my drinking problem. Relationships, why don't you be quiet? Why don't we go to a professional to do that? I got to tell you, guys, I speak all over the world. I get an opportunity to do this a lot. And I got to tell you, folks, this is the one area of my talk that makes more people uncomfortable than you can shake a stick at. And yet the big book is crystal clear when it tells us to stop fostering dependence on us and start putting dependence on God. Why in the heck does the guy I'm sponsoring need to find God? Why does he need to have a spiritual experience and get a relationship with God if every time he turns around, I'm telling him what to do? You can't go out with her. Why? Who died and left you king of the universe? We can't date for the first year. Why? You have to quit that job. You can't. Why? You can't hang with those people. Why? You can't wear it. Why? See, these guys that got me in 1987 knew that if they didn't get me connected to God, I was going to die. God tells me what I can do and can't do. God gives me the power to have the coolest life in the world. We got too many people sitting around the rooms that are too chicken to go live life to its fullest, telling the newcomers what they can and can't do. That's not sponsorship. That's dictatorship. That's not sponsorship. A sponsor's job is to show somebody how to get through the 12 steps at a quick pace so they can have their very own spiritual experience. And after that, let's hold them accountable. And then we got somebody to buy us a hamburger now and then. How cool is that?
Amen.
I ended up in North Texas and had a little domestic disturbance with my first wife. And she was a nice lady and didn't deserve to be treated the way I treated her. And I was working at a country club up in North Texas. And anyway, to try to save this marriage, I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had a counselor that looked at I had a big stack of my medical papers. And says, "Oh, my Chris, I don't know." This little guy was the bottom line basic intern of a licensed counselor, a chemical dependency counselor. And this little guy was as nice as could be, but he looked at my little chart, you know, and this bipolar disorder and manic depressive and this, that, and the other. And I got a list of things, all with their attending medications and clinical depression. And I'm taking 7 pills a day. And I'm not knocking any of this, guys. I'm glad I had it. I probably wouldn't dead. But I had all this information to show, look, I'm special. I'm different. He looked at this stuff. He said, "Chris, I've asked you a couple of questions. I can just tell you one simple thing. You're a drunk. You're an alcoholic. And you need to get your skinny little butt to Alcoholics Anonymous." Wow. And it was a couple of weeks later we had this little disturbance, and I said, "Okay, I'll go to AA." And I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was an old geezer sitting in there, and he said, "Chris, do you have a problem with alcohol?" I was drunk. I had a quart of beer in the truck. I said, yes, I got a problem. He said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know if the steps were on the wall or not. I mean, guys, it was pitch black in that room. There's a little light, like the psycho, and hanging a little light hanging down. And it was up in this dirty loft, and I got accustomed to the room. And there was 3 or 4 people in the room, along with this guy in the easy chair. It was scary at best. And I'm sitting there kind of freaking out. And then there was other people there. And they says, welcome, Chris. Okay, so now who's got the problem? I'll never forget it. And I started to go, what am I, chopped liver? I'm an alcoholic. Does that count? No. Who's got the problem? Like something you might drink over. Like I might drink because I'm an alcoholic. They're not buying any of they want to hear what the problem is. Y'all understand this? Makes me want to scream because I still see it. This lady, I'm having trouble with my husband. He's an alcoholic, and she wasn't even an alcoholic. She was an Al-Anon, but we sat in the meeting, and we talked about this lady's husband for an hour and what she could possibly do to help this husband. Oh, my gosh. And I'm sitting in there, been drinking, went home drunk. She says, "God, I thought you went to an AA meeting." I says, "I did." I says, "It was pretty cool." I says, "I think those people are gonna be able to use my help in that place, you know, because it seemed a little unorganized to me." And I went back the next day, and who's got the problem? And some little guy is shopping, and he's coming from a treatment center, and he'd bought a poster, and he didn't want the poster, and he was just wasting money. And we talked about shopping for an hour. So you're getting a little uncomfortable because you got that problem too, huh? We need to talk about that after the meeting. God, help us. I spent 7 years, guys, and we're telling war stories, and we're fixing your problems, and I don't own a big book, and I don't have a sponsor, and they just keep telling me to come back. I'll say this and move on, guys. I'm going to hit this, and then I'm out. I had an old guy come up one time, and he'd been sober a long time up there, and he had a big book. One of those big books, like some of you guys I've seen today, has got duct tape around it because they've actually opened the bastard, you know, and had it, and it's ready to go. And he had a big book under his arm. He said, "Chris, we're going down to Clyde's. We're going to eat some hamburger, and we're going to talk about the steps a little bit. You're welcome to come with us if you want to." And I'm thinking, it's about time somebody invited me to lunch. Good heavens. And I said, "Well, thank you so much." And I look over his shoulder, and there's a lady going back by the coffee room, and she's going, I'm thinking, what the? I'm fixing to get into something here. And I said, "Buddy, God, I just remembered I got to get back to work, but I'll go another time." And he said, "Buddy, we're open anytime. We'll do it another time. Thank you." And he split. And I walked back to the coffee. He says, "I'm so glad I caught you, Chris. I just need to tell you, we're so glad to have you here. And you just need to keep coming back, little brother. You don't need to worry about those old stupid steps right now. Right now, you just need to easy does it and just go to meetings and everything's going to be okay." Okay. All right. Was this lady trying to hurt me? Of course not. She was trying to help me. By watering this down as much as you can water it down, she took a real alcoholic that's fixing to cut his throat lying to me. If you're telling people to just go to meetings and expect them to get well, you need to stop. If you find that abrasive, I apologize. But we are killing people that way. When did it become okay to not tell the newcomer how to get well? When did we get off the page of setting a newcomer down and explaining the 12 steps and our urgency to have this thing called a spiritual experience? We've gotten such to such a politically correct spot in most groups that I come across where we don't want to talk about God and we don't want to talk about the steps. Anything else is fair game. But don't talk about the steps. Don't talk about the spiritual experience. Well, I'm going to tell you something, folks. For anybody that's brand new in here, let me be the first to break it to you. Alcoholics Anonymous is unapologetically about God. This is about a spiritual experience. It is sure not about religion. It is absolutely everything to do with the thing called a spiritual experience. If you're the real McCoy, that's going to be your salvation. Buddies, we're not going to jam this down anybody's throat. What you believe is between you and your sponsor and what God has lays on your heart. I mean, I don't know where God's going to take you. I just know that if you're dependent on another person to keep you sober, you're going to be so disappointed it's not even funny. If you're the real McCoy. I'm not knocking that other people can't help us. God, I've learned, Patty and I were talking about it the other day, how many people we know in this fellowship that we can reach out and touch to solve, to help us understand any problem we're going through. The fellowship has blessed us so much. But the fellowship can't remove the obsession to drink. Please, let me say it again. The fellowship cannot remove the obsession to drink. And if the obsession to drink doesn't leave you, if the 10th step promises on page 84 and 85 don't come true in your life, that position of neutrality, then the next thing that comes along the line, you're going to drink over. You're going to be, can I say it, triggered. Oh my God. There's no such thing as a trigger. There was once. He was a horse. He's dead. But he was a good horse. I 7 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous and couldn't get sober. Every time I would show my butt again, I'd come back to AA and it would be the same thing. I would come in and I would pick up another desire chip. I would hang around your rooms for a few weeks until the pain of not drinking one stupid day at a time would drive me back out of the room. My head would say I could take a couple of drinks or eat some pills or do some other outside stuff, and I would do that. And the craving would kick in, and I would be off to the races again. I'm working for my twin brother up in North Texas. It's 1987, and I pick up a stack of return checks one cold November night, and not like this cold, but cold. And I picked up the stacks of return checks and went into my apartment, sat on the floor. My furniture's gone. There's a couple of ferrets, and I'm looking at them, and they're looking at me, and I open those return checks and the rent check's gone, and I realize that I've bankrupted another checking account. Guys, I'm 35 years old and I've owned two businesses and I've got about $200 or so, I thought, in the bank. That's how well I'm doing. I've got a $600 pickup I'm driving. I'm thinking I'm the Donald Trump of North Texas, you know, because I own a business. Actually, my twin brother owned it and they kept me on out of the generosity of their hearts, for heaven's sakes. And I'm knowing that I'm going to have to go to my sister-in-law, bless her heart, ask her for some money to bail me out one more time. Insurance is gone. There's no more going back to treatment. There's no more therapy. There's no more nothing for me. I've tried AA. I've sat naked in sweat lodges. I've been in churches built like teepees. I've been dipped, dunked, neutered, spayed. I've tried everything I can. I've done positive affirmations. I've stood in front of thousands of mirrors and lied to myself. I got up and went to the medicine cabinet and pulled down a couple bottles of pills with tears in my eyes. But I need to say some relief. Ate those pills. No fanfare, no note. Fed the ferrets and took those pills. And about the time those pills hit my stomach, I heard a voice that said, don't do this, go back to AA. Not a thought, not a consideration, just I heard a voice. Somebody asked me not long ago, was it a man's voice or a woman's voice? I thought this was a trick question. I don't know, let me think. For me, it was a man's voice, don't do this, go back to AA. And I made myself sick. I heard it a couple of times. I made myself sick, and I heard the voice one more time. And I lay down on the side of the bed. You know how you do, one leg off, and conked out. And I woke up the next morning, heard that voice one last time. And I went to work. And at lunch, I went to a doctor that had been trying to get me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous for years. And he gave me some doggy downers to detox. And at 6 o'clock that night, I was running late, and I said I'd go to this meeting. And somebody showed me this meeting in Louisville. It's not there anymore. It was a little Big Book Thumper meeting. And he showed me one night. He said, Chris, let's go into this meeting. And I was drunk, and I couldn't go. I couldn't muster up the courage to go. And he said, Betty, if you ever want to go, go, because this is a Big Book place. All they do is study the work in there, and they'll help you get through this work. And I remember making a mental note, you're not going to get laid in that room, so forget it. And I'm not going to go back. And I want to get well, guys. Y'all understand that? But I don't want to land in a room full of zealots. People hear me talk like this from the podium, and they think I'm doing this in an AA meeting. I'm not. I'm not at all. I'm as quiet and straightforward as I can be in an AA meeting. I'm not trying there to preach to anybody. I got you captive here. But I went to that meeting. It was too late to go to this other meeting I'd gone to before, and at 6 o'clock it was getting dark, and I walked in the back door of this meeting. Some of y'all have heard me say this a million times, but I walked in, and it was one of those shotgun meetings, and everybody in there was smoking. Because back in the day, we could smoke in meetings. You guys out there freezing your butt off. The real smokers have already got up and gone. Y'all know that, don't you? And I'm hurrying up. I walked in, and I didn't like the smoke. And somebody was laughing real loud over there, and I got really self-conscious. I got about 40 pounds right here, guys, and I'm just a big... kidney damage and liver damage, and I got a big old beard and hair down to my shoulders. I think I look cool, and I look like a street bum. And I've got one of those old Fruit of the Loom T-shirts on, and this is November. Y'all hear me? And I got a little raggedy coat on, Fruit of the Loom T-shirt, all stained from the sweat. I'm working in this warehouse, and I have old dirty Levi's I hadn't changed in days, and I mean, I am a mess. And I walk in, and I'm so self-conscious, and I'm detoxing, and my little head says, you need to do this like Sunday. Come back a couple of days. Detox first, then come back. And about the time I took a step back, I actually walked back on this little girl's foot. She swears she didn't come up on my blind side. I think she did. Anyway. But I got to tell it because I told it from every podium I've ever talked about. This little girl hooked her finger in my belt loop and she said, sit down, cowboy. You're not going anywhere. Her sponsor had been across the room and seen me turn around like I was going to leave. And she said, get him. Gave her the high sign. And she did what we're supposed to do in AA. She got me. It didn't matter that she was younger than me, and thank God that she wasn't off in some little specialty meeting with all her own. She was just a little responsible member. I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying at the time, if this little 19-year-old girl had been off in some young adult meeting talking about young adult things, you'd have had a different speaker tonight. There wasn't any old hairy-legged boys getting between me and the door. This little girl stopped me from leaving. She got me a roll of paper towels and cleaned up my old spilt coffee. The chairperson took charge of the meeting. Oh, my God. Guys, the problem in our fellowship is not personalities. The problem in our fellowship is stupid meeting formats that haven't been changed in 40 years, where we allow people to talk about their day. And this person, there was a meeting format there similar to it. And this person saw me. Knew that he'd seen me up in North Texas before, knew that I didn't need to be fixed, and I didn't need to be scared. What I needed was hope. And they said, let's go around and share how our lives have changed as a result of working the steps. And I remember he laughed and he said, and that means if you haven't worked the steps, pass. Wow. 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 And they went around the room and they talked about working the 12 steps and they talked briefly about how their lives had changed and about going back to school and starting businesses and being married and buying cars. And lady at the one side had little new car keys and you know, just the miracles that happened to us. And they didn't talk from some spiritual mountain talk. They talked about getting their credit cards back. And I swear to God, there was a lady in there that said, man, she said, I got a car out there. She said, Chris, it's got a jack and a spare and an insurance and the car tags all at the same time. And I remember, looking at her like, are you shitting me? You know, it's like, and we were laughing about this, but at the end of the deal, I picked up a chip and everybody hugged me, and this old geezer came up with a big book and he said one more time, he said, Chris, I just got to ask you one question, just one question, because the book asked me to ask you this. And I said, buddy, that's okay, go ahead. He said, are you done? Because we're not here to mess with you if you're not. He didn't say, we're going to help you stay sober one day at a time. He didn't say that. He said, we're going to show you how to live life one day at a time. And you don't have a clue how to do that. And we want to show you. If you're willing to do this, we'll sit with you and we'll work you through the steps pretty quick. And we'll guarantee you a spiritual experience and your life will change. And oh, by the way, you won't ever drink again. Well, you want to talk about hope? I said, absolutely. And the next day they were on my doorstep knocking. Shit. 9 o'clock. You know, it's 9 o'clock Saturday morning. I'm running around looking for my patch. Who in the hell's outside my door? You know, and they knew I wasn't going to come back. They knew I'd talk myself out of it, give me a couple of days to get my feet on the ground, just enough to go crazy again. They knocked on the door, and one of them little guys had come pick me up and says, my sponsor said I'm supposed to take you back to the meeting. Wow. Okay. And I got dressed, and we went to the meeting, and we got on our knees in the back room, and we did a third-step prayer. My sponsor was at the time, he explained to me that the third step was going to obligate me to go share hope with newcomers, just like they'd shared with me. He said the third step was about obligating me to share hope with the newcomer, just like they had done with me. Didn't have anything to do with the rest of my life or Jesus or religion or anything. It had to do with my responsibility for the next drunk. We got up and we went, got some lunch and came back. They bought. That was pretty cool. We came back and they gave me a notebook. He pulled a notebook out of his car, in a truck. He pulled it out and he says, Chris, it's time, buddy. It's 6 o'clock tonight. We'll see you at the meeting. But while you're home detoxing, because that's what you're doing, I'm coming apart. He says, why don't you start working on your fourth step? Day 2, I'm working on a fourth step. And people in here sitting right, I could never have done that. I know you couldn't. If I hadn't, I would have died. I'd been in AA 7 years and had not worked one step. And these guys knew that the race was going. My disease was progressing at warp speed, and if I didn't get some relief quick, I was not going to be well. He didn't ask me to write the All-American novel. He didn't say, you've got to have at least 3,000 names on that old inventory. He said, just start writing the names of the people you're pissed at. Can you start that way? And I said, yes, and your name's going on there. And he laughed just like that, and that was the rest, and that's what we did. We got cranking with that. 2 weeks later, I've got a completed four-step. They're showing me the disciplines of 10-11. They're talking to me about prayer and meditation. You'll follow? And I'm sitting on the tailgate of my truck, and I've had a spiritual experience. Those guys in the first month of my sobriety at that group there in North Texas started allowing me to work with others. They started showing me how to chair meetings, how to make coffee. It wasn't any of this crap. You got to sit on your butt and stew in your own juices for 6 months before you can sponsor somebody. Thank God the old-timers knew better than that. They said, buddy, you got to come with us and you got to get going with this. Guys, let me tell you something real quick before I get out of here. If sitting around the room talking about my bad day would make me feel as good as walking into an AA club and watching a little guy that I've been sponsoring turn around and start sponsoring somebody else and listen to the stuff come out of his mouth and the miracle in front of me of how this thing is carried from one drunk to another. If sitting around talking about my cat would make me feel as fulfilled and as rich and as sober as listening to my little brother get on his knees with a newcomer and do a third step just like he'd done with me, I'd shut up. I'd never speak from another podium. The problem is that we got so many people sitting around Alcoholics Anonymous today not doing anything except going to meetings. And I'm not knocking that if it's working for you. But my heart goes out to the cats who are sitting around these fellowships in these rooms for years and they're bone powder dry. Here's what we're starting to see by the thousands coming into our treatment centers. We're starting to see people, old timers, 20, 30, 40 years of sobriety, losing that sobriety, coming back in through treatment again. Because they stopped doing the one thing that Bill Wilson said would keep us sober, guaranteed to keep us sober. These guys that got around me in 1987 understood that page 14 and 15 were my pages. And they explained that if I didn't work with others, this book says you're going to grow spiritually by working with others. I said, how is working with an old drunk sitting there at the coffee shop talking to him about the 12 steps going to keep me sober? Said, nobody seems to know this. I don't know if I know it anymore. I'm 23 years sober. I don't know if I've got this figured out. I just know that when I do it, the selfishness and self-centeredness that has ruined me and choked me all my life goes away. And I start for a minute, start to feel useful. And in that condition, I've never once wanted to take a drink. This idea that you have to be sober for a period of time before you can go find you a protege to work with must be smashed. We got to somehow get away from this idea that there's a stopwatch on this and that if you finally reach a year, then you can go sponsor somebody. Guys, you're not going to get in trouble with this. How can you screw this up? This is a train wreck already. Would y'all agree? You can't make this any worse than it already is because you're not. Because here's what you're not going to do. If I'm sponsoring you, here's what you're not going to do. You're not going to go run their life. You're not going to tell them what they can and can't do. What you're going to do is show them how to get through this work at a pretty good clip. You're going to sit there and listen to their third step prayer. You're going to show them how to do a fourth step. Listen to their fifth step. Talk to them about their character defects. Y'all understand this? It's real simple. Help them organize their amends. Get them out there. Hold them accountable around this prayer and meditation. And then you're going to poke a stick at them. And when the newcomer comes in, he's going to look at you. And you're going to look at him. And you're going to say, buddy, I'm not going to wait another 5 seconds. If you don't get him, I'm going to get him. And then he'll get his little butt up there, and as he's walking towards the door, he'll be looking back behind him. He's like, what do I do? Do the same thing I did with you. Love him. Teach him. Real quick, I got to go. I got a guy in my sponsorship lineage, a guy named Paul Martin. He's passed away a long time. His sponsor was Paul Stanley, one of the original guys. Wrote a book in one of the stories in the back of the book, Truth Freed Me. That's my sponsorship lineage comes from Dr. Bob, and this is this guy. But he wrote this article, and Paul used to talk nonstop about it. It's one of the things that he said. He said AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. AA is of itself sufficient. AA of itself is sufficient. I'm not knocking any other disciplines. You want to add some therapy? Great. You want to go to the gym? Great. You want to go to church? Great. Our experience around the drinking is that AA worked is sufficient. If you're just going to meetings, you're not in AA. I'm not trying to be anything but kind here. Please. No, I'm not. I'm telling you for an absolute fact. We don't talk about it enough. And when people relapse, then we're blaming it on everything else under the sun, and Alcoholics Anonymous is what takes the brunt of it. If you work the 12 steps, you will have a guaranteed spiritual experience. I'm not saying that we need to be heavy-handed with this and go into meetings and beat people up with this message. I'm saying that we need to change our meeting formats, consider possibly that the message that was carried out of this book is the message that we're supposed to be carrying to the newcomer that comes through the door. If the guy's been sitting in these meetings for a couple of months and he hasn't even started the steps, whose fault is that, buddies? It's our fault. It's Alcoholics Anonymous' fault. The good news is if you'll get busy and get in the trench with us, you'll see exactly what this is about. The book talks about it. Shoulder to shoulder, carrying this message. Walking into this room tonight and seeing, I can't tell you how many of you I've met over the years up here, up in this area. And the friends that we have in these rooms. And we're not friends because we're all sober. We're friends because we have a common journey. That we're all trying in our own way to carry the message. And that's the way I want to end it. I want to explain to you guys real quick where I'm coming from. We don't need another Chris Raymer. You guys don't need to go beat people up. I've got the market on that. Each of you in your own way, your kindness, your gentleness, as long as you're carrying the message, the same message out of the book, in your way, you will reach people that I will never be able to touch, that I will offend, that I will scare. That's why we need you. We don't need you to be me. We need you to be you. You intellectuals that can explain this stuff and the minutia of this split thing. Thank you for sticking. For every old geezer in here, from Mel on down, that have come in these rooms and stayed, thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. I think I've got it figured out how to stay sober 23 years. Just had my 23rd birthday out in West Texas, and I out camping. I don't have a clue how this 24th year is coming, you know? Some things are kind of different in the 24th year. I don't know what that's about, you know? Thank you for sticking. I got to say this for every woman in this room that stayed. God, the responsibilities and the pressure we put on you women, it blows me away. Oh, we want you to come to meetings, but you also get a job and raise the kid and take care of the husband. And take. It's like, no wonder. But there's a bunch of you in here that continue to make room for women to sponsor. And not just to sit around and talk about where the best place to buy fragrance is, but how to finish a fourth step. No, and now we've got it. I'm telling you. The number one email I get from around the country is that. Where can I find good women to work with? And buddy, I tell you, I've got to hug a whole bunch of you in this room. I know you're here. Thank you for sticking. For every young adult that's come into this room and hadn't been run off by some stupid idiot trying to scare you in here with a war story, thank you for sticking. Thank you for understanding your place in this fellowship. Guys, I said it before. Good God. We come into these rooms and everybody wants to talk about the damage we did. Golly, just think about the simple act of not drinking today. How many people were affected by that? If you stay sober, arm yourself with the facts, and can stand in a room and talk passionately about your life and share your experience with the newcomers coming in the door, how many thousands of people do you think will be impacted by your sobriety? It's an honor to know every one of you. Thank you.